there's always this one component that I find very interesting, that people love to wield the Bible, and we do it in politics. People love to use the Bible always to prove their point of view. And it's always like what I consider this weaponization.
Hi, and welcome to the Creative Solutions Podcast, where we interview cutting-edge creative artists, entrepreneurs, and innovators who are changing the world. We also bring you tips and techniques that you can implement. This episode is brought to you by my favorite productivity hack, the Brain FM app, this podcast's hosts, Podbean, as well as my book, Speak From Within. Hey there, and welcome to the Creative Solutions Podcast. I'm your host, Isolde Trachtenberg. So appreciate you taking the time to be here and to listen. This week's show is going to be incredible. I am honored beyond the beyond to have this week's guest on the show. I want to introduce you to Saria Khan. Saria is a powerhouse, blending marketing prowess with a dedication to community service, holistic wellness, and my favorite, animal liberation. From her roots in Manhattan to adventures in Laguna Beach, Saria's journey spans roles from promoting small renovations to championing global animal welfare. Whether rescuing medical supplies with the IFA Foundation, amplifying art on social media for the American Friends Musée d'Orsay, I wish that I said it correctly, I don't speak French, or advocating for animal rights with Voters for Animal Rights, Saria's impact is felt far and wide, and I am grateful for it. With over four decades of tireless advocacy, Saria's journey is a testament to the profound impact one person can make. So I want to ask you to join me and the podcast to discover the inspiring journey of this true humanitarian and advocate for change. Saria, thank you so much for being on the show. Welcome.
Hi, thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
I want to just jump right on in. And we met at the viewing of one of the most important films that has come out in I don't know how long, Christspiracy, which I want to talk about a lot. But you and I, right before we started this little chat recording, we sort of talked a little bit about our histories. And I would love it if you would, and I know you've got four decades of activism and four decades of awareness. And I mentioned to you that I can never make up, for example, for all the animals I've eaten. I was a hardcore carnivore when I was a kid. And then I said the beautiful Maya Angelou quote, which is, when you know better, you do better. And I would love to talk to you about your journey. What led you from where you started to today, where you're going to be opening up a rescue? So can you just, I know, I'm like, here, encompass your whole life in the next 20 seconds. But can you talk a little bit about what are the highlights of from where you started to what brought you to today and the work that you're doing?
It's a confluence of things. So first of all, thank you for having me. And everyone's journey, I think, is important. Yours, mine, as part of this discussion. You know, the short version is that I think I was about 11 or 12 years old. I should have probably been sleeping. It was a school night. I went downstairs. It was about 11:30 at night. Nova, PBS Nova, had a special, and I was eating a bowl of cereal with milk. And I went downstairs, turned the television on. It was Channel 13. I was here in New York, and I saw, you know, it was one of those factory farming exposés. And literally the next day, it did a number in those preteen, you know, in those preteen moments of my life. I just decided no more. The journey from that, it was sort of easier for me growing up, you know, as a child of the 80s, as a teen, early teen of the 80s, because my father had was born in India. He's a man of Muslim descent. My mom was American, who was married to a Greek gentleman at the time. And I already was consumed and surrounded by a diet that consisted of a Mediterranean diet, and surrounded by legumes, lentils, chickpeas, you know, lots of vegetables. My dad was primarily vegetarian. So the transition was really easy for me. But something struck a nerve at that very moment. I think a lot of people, like, say, remember where they were when John F. Kennedy, right, was killed. It's sort of the same thing for me when it came to this. I knew in my heart something was off. I couldn't place a pin in it, but I knew something was wrong. And from that journey, it has been an ongoing process to where I am, thankfully, today, with the experience behind me and the knowledge to say, you know, I can now advocate for them appropriately and try to reach others to have this very important conversation about ethics and animals. I don't know if that answers your question.
Oh, no. One of the things I should have warned you about before we started recording this is that I have embraced the pause in my life, right? So,
okay.
So you will notice that I sometimes stay quiet after I hear an
Okay.
answer because I'm sort of taking everything in and synthesizing it because I think there's this expectation that we're going to just jump in and go, oh, let me just blah, blah, blah.
Okay.
And I kind of want to take it in and go, okay. So, and I appreciate your words very much that this is a journey for everybody. Everybody goes through their own process on this sort of awakening, if you will. And your journey with multiculturalism also is a point well made because there is this notion that we have that here in the USA that, you know, we used to be a melting pot, for example, and that was the way we thought of it, is there all these cultures coming together as one. And when I'm an immigrant and when my family arrived in the USA, that's what it was. It was a melting pot, which was become
Right.
like everybody else. And then they moved to salad bowl, which was hold on to your cultural heritage and your traditions, but live, you know, in one space. And today we're looking at the notion of it's not just human animals. To me, we are also, you and I are talking about and working in the realm of encompassing non-human animals as well. And so
That's correct.
when you're talking about this, when you're talking about here I am today, and I came to this, you know, and I loved Nova when I was a kid, so I'm very excited that you mentioned Nova. There are moments in our lives where our eyes get opened, right? Where the paradigm shifts, where things look different all of a sudden. For me, it was very much a case of I started wondering, well, what part of the animal did this steak come from? That was my beginning to ask those questions. And for you, you sort of were living a life where that was only part of it because you already had this diet that was rich. I love the Mediterranean diet anyway, but it was rich in a lot of the nutrients that we can get without ever harming animals. So
Right.
when you're doing this work, when you're working now and people come to you and say things like, oh, I could never give up cheese or give up steak or give up whatever, what are your thoughts and what guidance do you have to someone who is asking these questions?
That's a great, that it, it that is a great point. So it's funny, you know, well, I'll address two things. The first thing is that just going back to in terms of diet, you know, it was a process. I mean, now I'm a teenager in school or dating, you know, my then boyfriend who eventually became my husband. You know, my ex-husband had grown up in a very strong Irish Catholic, Irish Italian family on Long Island. And, you know, I would go over and my mother-in-law, God rest her soul, she was one of my best friends. I would walk in and say, you know, I'm not eating any meat. And you didn't make grandiose statements, right? Today, it's sort of like it becomes part of your vernacular. I'm a this, I'm a that. There's a lot of identity that goes on with describing who we are today. But back then, we didn't do that. It was just, no, I choose not to have that. Thank you, but no, thank you.
Right.
But I would get sometimes not from her, but just from people, weird looks. And I was you weren't a weirdo, but you were the strange one. It's been a barrage of where are you getting your protein from? You're not healthy. All of which were nonsense, all of which were not true, but I wasn't going to go in a full diatribe to explain to people, you know, and I basically was young. I didn't have the knowledge base to arm myself with these conversations. So now, you know, in this part of my life, you know, I have very specific, educated answers when I hear, you know, questions that come to me regarding protein levels. And, you know, I can refer to studies. You can refer people to documentaries. There's so much information. I've gotten a little less tolerant as I've aged just because we're in the information age. Anything that you need answers to with just a modicum of critical thinking skills, you could really break down yourself of what the truth is and what the truth is for you. And, you know, I always say that you look at me as the example. I'm 55 years old. And I say to myself, I'm still here. I'm still kicking. I'm healthy. Somehow I'm living. And sometime I work out, I have muscle tone. You know, it's a confluence. It's a mixture. It's a melange. It's a melange of different things. It's not just one thing, but that's just addressing health. Then I just, you know, sometimes just have to boil it down to, for me and my ethics and my, you know, my hand is on my heart and then it's going up to the sky right now. I would say that for me, it's my journey. And I think as like my Instagram handle or just in general, the concept of ahimsa is to do the least amount of harm. It doesn't mean I've always done that. And like you said, when you mentioned cheese was the last thing for me to give up. So I was a pescatarian for years. And that was a process. And then me still unknowingly, you know, really not knowing enough about the dairy industry in my 20s. And then in my 30s, started getting more of a feel for that and realizing the horrors that go behind, that are within the walls of the dairy industry. And understanding that when people have it, actually, people have a tougher time disconnecting, removing cheese from their life more than if you put chocolate and cheese on a table in front of someone, you said, which one would you rather give up? People would say, I'd rather give up chocolate. There's an addictive component similar to cocaine when you ingest cheese that wants you to continually yearn for more. So there is work that needs to be done. Some people can do a cold turkey and some people need to be sort of weaned off the cheese ideal, you know, and I understand that because I've been there.
Yeah, it's interesting that you say that. For me, my best friend, who is the executive director of a nonprofit that works in the Chesapeake Bay and who works with farmers, and she is not vegan. She and I were talking, and I've been a vegetarian since 1987, so a long time. And she and I were talking, and I was saying something like, blah, 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 cheese. I love my cheese. And Kristen just said to me, Isolde, you do know what they do to dairy cows, don't you? And I went, no, I don't know what they do to. And she told me, and I went, I guess I'm vegan now. And it was, you know, once she told me, I was like, okay, now that I know, there's no going back. And so it's interesting, you know, that was, you said, you know, some people go jump off and go cold, and some people go, oh, I'm going to wean my, I did, there was no weaning at that point. I was like, okay, that's it, I'm done. But you know what's interesting? You said something that I thought was really fascinating. You were talking about, you know, you're 55, I'm 57, and we are in this, there is this barrage of, you're not going to have enough protein, you're not going to have enough that, you're not going to. And what's really funny to me is how often, and actually the night we went to see Christspiracy, I went with a friend I'd only met once before. We met at Coletta, which is a phenomenal vegan Italian restaurant here in Manhattan. And we just had, I'm a chatty person. So I just happened to sit, we were sitting next to each other and we started chatting. He was there with a date and the two of them were eating and we started chatting and we became Facebook buddies and then boom. And so when the opportunity came to see Christspiracy together, I went, sure, of course I'd love to come. And so we went to another great vegan restaurant, and why can't I, Spicy Moon. I couldn't think of it for a second.
Okay.
Another
yeah, sure.
Great vegan restaurant after Christspiracy. And we were talking and my age came up and he went, you're what? He's like, I thought you were in your like early to mid 30s. And I went, oh, it's vegan living. Thank you very much. And we moved on. You know, I'm like, vegan living and genetics. I'm very lucky. But at the same time, I feel like, truthfully, you know, and I am not specifically going, everyone should be vegan, because even though I think that, and I'm honest about it, if you listen to the show, you know that. But more to the point, I think the proof is, for me anyway, in the notion of how do I feel? And honestly, Saria, part of the problem for me is I don't want to take in the fear and the rage and the terror and the energetic damage of eating that flesh of a being that was given no choice, and that was in a situation where that the last thing that being feels is terror and pain. And so that's my journey. That was it, and it's and it has been made easy to do that, to go, yeah, I don't ever want to participate in that. And you know, and luckily, my health and all of that is just fine. So when we're in this situation, when we're, you know, when I talk to people who are, well, I could never give up cheese. And I appreciate you saying it's a journey. I get that. There is this, and you said it yourself, there is this sort of frustration of going, if only you knew. And so that brings me to why I said, Sari, I really want you to be on the show, because I think Christspiracy is a way of getting that answer of the if only you knew. Here's a way to know. Here's a way that is, I think, incredibly accessible to start getting some of this information. So I'm wondering if you can talk a little bit about, and by a little bit, I mean the next 45 years, talk to me about Christspiracy and what the movie is, because it is a film, a documentary film, and why it's so important for it to be out now.
So yeah, great, great points. What I will say, so the directors, the co-directors, Kip Anderson and Cameron Waters of the film Christspiracy, you have the other, everyone is very familiar with the documentary Cowspiracy. Then they had Seaspiracy, and they also had the other Netflix documentary, What the Health. So I came to this, sort of on the last minute, becoming, say, a part of the assistant producer segment of this journey. And I think I will speak for myself. What I found interesting about the film is that I sort of, I've been walking the walk and talking the talk for many years now. And, when I have conversations with people, if I'm on my TikTok feed, I get a lot of, first of it's a lot of it's hyperbole, a lot of it's blowback, a lot of conversations. People in social media, they can be, it's venomous sometimes. But the other thing, though, there's always this one component that I find very interesting, that people love to wield the Bible, and we do it in politics. People love to use the Bible always to prove their point of view. And it's always like what I consider this weaponization. And that's a lot of religious texts. And usually it's man trying to wield these texts to stay in positions of power. So the interesting thing is that, you have, for me, I look at this issue constantly, for me, on how to handle the answers that come to the questions that come to me. It's one of three ways. It's a climate issue, then there's a health issue, and then if I'm creating a Venn diagram, if you can imagine that, the last concern is the ethical issue, and the intersection of all of that is animals and oppression. And the ethical concerns were being addressed in Christspiracy. And it was very interesting to me because of my background, because, for instance, my mother, who I was raised as a Catholic, but my mother went through the processes to actually become Buddhist in her 40s. My father, who was Muslim, but from being from India, lived a vegetarian lifestyle his entire life. Because I went to a Catholic university, I had attended St. John's University, and you had to take a certain amount of credits regarding theology and philosophy. So I've always been, and then for years studying Buddhism myself because of where I come from, just trying to understand more about, well, people are constantly coming at me with, they're throwing psalms and verses regarding the Bible. And, I knew some of the answers, but Christspiracy, the movie itself, really did a deep dive into not only the ideas behind Christianity and animal use, but it looks at a variety of situations, whether you're Hindu, Islamic, they're looking at the concepts and the precepts regarding yoga, Hinduism, and it goes through, it takes you on a journey over 7 years about the rituals and the conversations surrounding animal use. And at the end, it's not meant to embarrass, it's meant to highlight the, first of all, the cognitive dissonance that occurs within each religion, and those who are the powers that be, right? Who are supposed to be giving us this information. And yet you see, you know, if you ask a question, you know, how would Jesus kill an animal? There's no one answering that in all of the film. And we're talking about visits to the Vatican that's saying, I don't see Jesus picking up a knife and slitting the sheep's throat. Like, you see that. So then so the film addresses on a variety of different levels the ethics behind animals and animal use, and reveals some pretty incredible things going back, you know, in terms of theology, going back to the derivative of words and etymology. And it really makes a person walk away and think, perhaps within yourself and your journey with your spiritual being, you need to revisit what you've been told, because oppression is never the way. Subjugation is never the way. So that's what I hope Christspiracy and what I believe is trying to examine, and does so very, very effectively.
Taking a second.
Sure.
So here's the thing. I'm going to be very honest. I don't want to be like, yes, what she said, and we're done. Because on some level, that's sort of what I want to say. And yet I remember I worked at NASA for many years doing environmental education and outreach. And I was at the University of Maryland, there was a big soil conference. And Daniel Hillel, who was a PhD, he was a dual biblical scholar and soil scientist. And we were talking about the etymology of dominion. And it was just such a hit on the noggin when they were talking about it in Christspiracy. And he said, yeah, the original Aramaic is, it's not power over, it's stewardship. It's being a good caretaker. And he said this in the 90s. This was like 1998, I want to say, to me. And I went, oh, that just explains so much. And yet this, even in the movie, we see, and I don't want to give too much away, although my goodness, you know, you can tell that I'm sitting here going, if you're listening to this, just go see, find a way to see this film. It's important. but even in the movie, there is so much justification for subjugating, for hurting animals, because the quote, the Bible tells us so. And I can't, as someone who's going, I want to think about this critically, I want to say, okay, even if it did say that, we can think critically about it today and go, is it necessary? You know, and that's the thing that I would like to ask you to sort of comment on is Christspiracy itself has so much to say about this. And I keep seeing memes that come across that say, you know, in a world where you can choose to be anything, choose to be kind. And we have so many alternatives now. We have so many ways of doing things, of living in this world that don't require using animals in any way, except for like coming and petting, like I pet my cats, and they are the kings of my household. What do you think keeps us from doing that? What do you think is, I mean, more and more people, vegans are the fastest growing group on the planet, blah, 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 all of that. We can talk about that too. But there are people who are just holding really fast to, well, this is the way we've always done things, or this is what the Bible says, or this is how I want to do it. What do you think is the reason, or are the reasons for that kind of sort of steadfast grasping on to a way of doing things that is not necessary, at least in my opinion? And more importantly, what are the steps that we can take to live in closer alignment to a kinder way of being?
Three letters, ego. These are my opinions, obviously, but yes, there's cognitive dissonance in here. I'm going to share something. And when she listens to this podcast, she will know who this is. Very good friend of mine. My friends know me, you know, and they know what I stand for. They know this is very important to me, not just to me, but they're also, you know, people love to say they love animals, right? I love animals. And I have a dear friend right after the movie premiered said she we were texting the next morning. I love her, love you. And she said to me, I just want you to know yesterday I didn't have any meat products or any animal products whatsoever all day. And I said, you know, and I don't ask them, I don't talk about this. When I'm with my friends, we don't discuss this. I talk about what I'm doing for organizations. We share work, we share ideas, values, politics, but, and I said, oh, you know, like she brought it up very randomly. And she said, but except for that one little tablespoon of milk, you know me, I need my coffee and I need my teaspoon of regular milk and whatever. And again, no judgment. And, you know, we've known each other long enough. I actually texted her back later on in the evening. And, you know, and I've put up hundreds of posts regarding cows, what happens to women, the intersection between women and the objectification of animals and women. I mean, it goes on and on. But I texted her later on in the evening and I said, you know, just remember, you know, those babies were taken away from the mommy for you to have that one tablespoon of milk. And I'm like, I love you, but I just had to let you know that, just got to give it to you. And she laughed, you know, and she sent me a little heart emoji back. And it was like, you know, I used that opportunity just a reminder. And it's right there in those very moments that, you know, when you ask me the question, well, what is it? You know, it's habit. It's because we are so connected and we are so connected to the most primal parts of ourselves, whether it's how our food tastes, why we see such a problem today with sexuality. There's such a primal drive sometimes when it comes to us self-regulating, that to use critical thinking to know what we should do would be better for us. But as human beings, we are driven by that constant primal need to satiate, to fixate on, to satisfy. And I think that's part of it. Going back to the other thing that you said about, well, why is it that, you know, we know and people know these things, why don't they? And I do go back to the idea of ego, and not in the most psychiatric term of it, but just the pure fact that there's, especially today, especially in the political climate worldwide, it's always me versus you. It's always us versus them. It's always, you are correcting me, and people don't want to feel that they've lost an argument. So that is you holding on to ego, to something that has nothing, has no basis in reality. These are just subjective viewpoints, but it's having a conversation to let people understand you may hold this as being true, but I need you to think critically about what your reasoning is. And I think as Americans in particular, I just had this conversation this morning at Prospect Park with someone else, and this gentleman and I were talking about the loss of critical reasoning skills in the United States to evaluate an argument in the layers and that comes with an argument. So I think that's a problem. You know, it's a communication loss. And here's the thing, back to my information age conversation, we're at a time, I am floored constantly. Kudos to, I'm all about Gen Z. For me, you know, Gen Z is going to change the world, and Gen Alpha. And I see what's going on, and they are one of the smartest generations, smarter than baby boomers were, because they are going to switch things. They are going to change things up. They are shaking up the world, and they don't have the power and the money behind them yet, but it's coming. And I see what they're doing, and I see there is no excuse today to not try, at least try, because I didn't have access to recipes. I didn't have access to everything that comes with you trying to make this journey for yourself. I didn't have baking options years ago. You just knew milk, butter, and eggs, right? Today, there are so many opportunities for someone to use different ingredients to create something else. You can buy a car today that uses vegan leather. And yes, there's a conversation Toyota, Prius, Range Rover, Lexus. The list of car companies that are offering options other than upholstery in your car is amazing. And, you know, because the marketing and the manufacturers know this is a trend they need to jump on if they want to keep customers. So it's also tied into finance. And I think that there's a lot available to us today that was not even available 15 years ago. And the quality perhaps of vegan cheeses, the way people have been able to supplant the use of cheese and use different textures, because a lot of food is about we like texture and flavor. So we've been, and you have just great people all day long creating these incredible, highly protein dense filled, fiber rich foods, nutrient rich rich foods for you every day. And it's not just, okay, you either have a pizza or you don't anymore. You have so many options today.
I love that you said that. And I just made pizza for dinner last night with vegan pepperoni and vegan mozzarella and then spinach, sliced tomatoes, black olives, and artichoke hearts.
That sounds
And
great.
it was amazing. It was so good. Yeah, it's incredible, actually, that to just go, oh, honey, I'm going to make pizza or we're going to make nachos. And we don't think about it anymore. We just do it. And there's plenty of options. And that's the thing that I'm just sort of boggled by. I mean, when I when I went vegetarian in 1987, a long time ago, there was a place my mom and I would go for dinner a lot. Our Sunday afternoon, it was actually late lunch. Our Sunday afternoon late lunch after we were both done with work was Sizzler, which and then I went vegetarian, and all of a sudden it became the salad bar and a baked potato, right? It had been a steak, and then when I went vegetarian, it was the salad bar and a baked potato, but it was the salad bar with a lot of Thousand Island dressing, which of course is not vegan, and a lot of cheese. And then when I went vegan, not that much changed. And there are lots of places. That's one of the things that I noticed, like asking for, and I've had this happen in restaurants that are not vegan friendly, if you will. And I am the queen of looking at the menu and seeing the way for them to make me a meal out of other ingredients that are already there. And so I was at this restaurant in rural Pennsylvania. I was playing music at a college there, and spending the evening at, I think it was called the Great American Diner. That was where I was eating my dinner, and they had all sorts of stuff and none of it vegan. And I went, here's what I'd like for you to do. I would like to have a burger, no meat, but instead I would like you have these portobello mushrooms. And then so I asked them to make me this burger that instead of being grilled along with the meat, they grilled it separate, blah, blah, blah. And the chef came out after they'd given me my food and said, are you enjoying that? I'm like, absolutely. It's amazing. And he went, you know, that looks so good. It's going to be tomorrow's special. And I was like, that's great. You know, and similar things happened. I went with a bunch of people because I had no choice. I didn't have a car and everybody else was going. And if I wanted dinner, that was where I was going to eat, to the Outback Steakhouse. Right. And everybody's eating their animals. They come to me and I said, do you have a salad option? And they're like, no. And I said, okay, you have those little rolls, and can I have a dry baked potato? And I'll have a dinner salad. And she went away, the server went away and came back and said, if you had a salad, what would you want on your salad? And I said, oh, you know, lettuce, portobello mushrooms, cauliflower, broccoli, carrots, tomatoes, cucumbers, black olives, that sort of stuff. And then oil and vinegar dressing. And she went, okay. And she wrote it all down. And she came back with my baked potato and a bowl of little basket of the little biscuits. And then she brought this ginormous plate on which sat the most beautiful salad I had ever seen. And I'm like, wow. And she said, yeah, we didn't have any of this, but there's a Safeway in the same mall. So we just sent someone and they bought the ingredients and this is your salad. And I was like, this is the most amazing salad ever. And then everybody's meals checks come and everybody's $35, $40. And she comes over to me and she goes, so we weren't sure what to charge you because the biscuits come with whatever meal you get. And the salad, we just, you know, that was just us because we didn't have the ingredients. And she said, but the baked potato is $2.50. So we're going to charge you $2.50. Is that okay? And I went, yes, it's perfectly fine. We're going to charge me $2.50 for this meal. And again, and then the chef came out and said, you know, we're going to start serving salads. because people, it turns out, want them. And so,
right.
So that out, I don't know if it became a corporate thing, but that Outback Steakhouse went, this is something our customers want. And so the reason I'm telling you this long story, Saria, is because I would love for you to comment, if you would, about the changes. We're seeing changes. We're seeing some legislative changes. We're seeing vegan restaurants right and left in places where I didn't expect, like Oklahoma. Yep. So things are changing. And I would love it if you'd comment on the changes you're seeing. But also, I know you've done work with in legislation. Who is driving it? Is the legislation driving the change, or are the people driving the change of legislation? And if you want to be involved, what do you need to do?
All great questions. So, you may have to remind me of a couple of things that you just said, because I want to go back. No, this is all great. And one segues right into the other. So the first thing is that regarding changes, here's the thing. I look at, like you said, you're sitting with a group of friends. So I gave you one example of my friends noticing now. I have my dearest, closest people to me. Case in point, I was in California. I was in LA for the Christspiracy premiere. And the next day I went out to Palm Springs, and an ex-family member of mine asked me to come to his 60th birthday party. And it was still the mindset, now this is 60-year-old thought, he had chosen an Italian restaurant to me. And again, normally I just would have 10, 15 years ago, just went along with it. Mm-hmm. And he's like, and I said to him, I said, it's really not good. Let me take a look at the menu first. And it was sort of like there was pushback. And he's like, well, they have salads. And because he's thinking of me as my 18, 19, 20-year-old self, that a salad was just good enough for mm-hmm. a meal for a mm-hmm. vegan. That's the false idea that comes behind that vegans only eat salads, right? So, mm-hmm. which is not true. So, we moved around and everything was fine. But here's the thing. Now, when I go out to dinner, not only do I have options, but I have, here's one thing is that, you hear constantly from people, especially these conversations always happen in the social media, in the tech spaces, these vegans, these animal rights people are shoving their ideas down our throat. Okay. So, the thing is, I've had to live in your world for so many years, mm-hmm. and now I have options. So that's not the case. I've lived and I've had to somehow assimilate into something that I didn't believe in since I've been a child. But now my best friends, my son, when I visit him in San Diego, hey mom, I want to take you to this place tonight. Take a look at the menu. Let me know if that's good for you. They check for me, and mm-hmm. I don't need them to, because of course I speak up for myself. But that's the beauty of where we are now versus 20 years ago. Mm-hmm. You just sort of, like you said, you would go to an Outback, you would go out to dinner, you would sort of work around, and the salad really was the only option. Mm-hmm. So in terms of change and where we are, yes, New York City, California, I lived there for 5 years. It's already a naturally a healthier way to live just in general. There's your access to fresh produce, organic produce at a reduced cost is so much better. But now coming back to New York, I came back during COVID. I think I was the only New Yorker who came back to New York during COVID. When I moved back here, I see the options. And everywhere you go, they had the little VG, the little V on the bottom. Like you can find a V option on most menus in New York City. In fact, and if you want high end, if you want, for me, like a chain like La Botaniste that has several restaurants in the city, or I love ABCV, the Jean-Georges restaurant, if I want to go somewhere with a friend, and everything's plated and it's a constant, it's a movable challenge where people are just getting better and better at it. And you are satiated in the flavors and new types of food combination. It's just incredible. So I think we're moving in the right direction. For me though, it's never fast enough. I look at where we are now, and we have a long, long way to go. But when you said, is it legislation or is it pushing legislation as the market? It's a combination of both. So in my experience, I have seen companies now are going where the money is. So companies will continue to try to find ways. For instance, you had, I think it was BP, with electric cars. And we know the controversies regarding batteries and electric cars and what to do when the electric cars are finished. And right, there are issues here moving away from fossil fuels in terms of transportation and using an electric vehicle and what happens afterwards. And we don't know those long-term studies, that longitudinal data yet. But when you look at something like that, you say to yourself, okay, there are options now. 5 years ago, there weren't enough charging stations, but now you have a company like BP, or I forget if it was BP or Shell. BP will bought out groups of charging stations because they see there's money to be made as America continues towards embracing more climate friendly options. So it's the same thing with the food industry. You will start seeing restaurants more and more falling more in line. People are more self-aware, I believe. People want to change. The legislative side is a big, big issue for me. And unfortunately, in a place like New York, New Yorkers are still very outdated. New Yorkers are still live in pockets in many ways, whether it's divided by race, divided by elitist attitudes. It's still very segregated in many ways. And I look at what our mayor has done, and at least our mayor has embraced, whether or not he's doing it for the animals or not, but he has embraced for health concerns, Mayor Adams, the idea of going plant-based. And he speaks from his own personal journey, right? He's speaking from, as he says, coming from a family who suffered from many different disease states, and he wants to limit it. This man is in fantastic shape, and he has introduced that concept. And this is where you have the confluence of power and legislation and health, where he's introduced plant-based menus as the default menu in 16 top hospitals throughout New York City. So I think it's a mixture of many different things from many different sides, but then you're dealing with a lot of people. Politics is always beholden to where the money's coming from. And in New York City Council, they are part of that problem. So yes, they have moved in some ways to do some work, very small work, where they could just really, because then the pushback is always with New York City Council, and I'm hard on the City Council because I do know that people have housing issues. I do know the real issues that humans face on the day-to-day, and they try to thwart our feet. Ward off these conversations when it comes to animal rights and perhaps removing New York City horse carriages. It could be this the simple swipe of a pen and a new legislation. You can act and have them removed. But because you're afraid of the constituency and afraid of a union, you're afraid to touch us. It could be such an easy issue to rectify and to move and to be that city, but you are so beholden to where your campaign dollars are coming from. Because for me, I see politics as one thing. Politicians worry about two things. Politicians worry about whether or not they will get elected. The second issue they're always worried about is whether or not they'll get elected again. They're never thinking in the now, they're thinking about their next election. So I have a love-hate relationship because I know politicians are what we need to help legislate, especially on the federal level, especially when it comes to arguments and conversations right now happening at SCOTUS regarding the EATS Act that was pushed off from last November, that they will be talking about this year in terms of how animals are treated and interstate commerce regarding Prop 12. So there are many, many issues, but I do think the way, if you say, and I'm making a plea here, and this is and I speak very direct. If you say you love animals, right, you're using the word love, very strong word, has lots of meaning, then you need to act. You must activate yourself. And it could be as simple. It doesn't mean you need to attend a protest. It doesn't mean, yes, you can worry about your consumer choices, but putting pressure on your local legislators, find out what's affecting you locally, sign that petition. Make that phone call. They must respond to you. It's part of their due diligence to their constituency to listen to the people in their district. It takes you 5 minutes sometimes just to make a phone call or to send an email. Do it. And that's how I think we need more people to get actively engaged because people are afraid of politics. They're afraid to run. Younger people. I think politics is so important into moving this conversation, because if that's moving faster, then the animals may not suffer for as long.
Sharia for president.
No, no, but I'll back up anyone else. Listen, I have thought about running as an animal rights candidate. I believe it in the back of my mind, I have numerous times, but our system isn't set up for that, you know. But believe me, because how you really treat it does make a difference, you know, as old. I think, of course, I get angry. Of course, I get upset. I'm a human being, right? Of course, I make mistakes. I don't do anything 100%. There's a whole concept regarding pets alone through PETA and the concept of pet ownership. And then you have ideas. What happens to the cows if, you know, if we stop factory farms? And you know what? As I listen to the experts in this, they may just die off. That may happen. But the idea that we're oppressing them in lieu of that, there's something very wrong with that. I put the animal thing the most, at least for me, because I'm horrified by it. But I really, truly believe, I really, really believe that when a human being finds true compassion for the animal kingdom and views animals as something that walk beside us instead of below us, I believe you carry that kindness, that ahimsa, that compassion over to your brother and your sister. You may not do it 100%. You'll still get angry. You'll still get mad. But I believe the level of compassion and empathy you carry is stronger and greater.
I still say you for president, but can you imagine running on the Compassion Party? I think that would be, wow.
That would be amazing. That would be amazing.
Yeah, the day I found out I could never run for president was a sad day in my life, because that was, as soon as I found out that, first of all, peaceful transition of power was huge for me. But as soon as I found out that, people could run for the chief office of the land, I was, that was it. And then I found out, because I'm only a naturalized citizen, I can't run. I can't even run. So, so yeah, otherwise I would absolutely, I would have done it in a heartbeat. But it is interesting to me, like what, you know, I feel like you, the things that you said about compassion, the things that you said about, you know, we will, everybody's going to screw up. Everybody's going to make mistakes. Everybody's going to do something. There's not a single person, the Dalai Lama included, who isn't walking around with, you know, and he may be able to forgive himself because he's the big, you know, the head Buddhist, if you will. But there's no one who doesn't face some regret. The key, I think, for me anyway, is when I see those regrets in my life and acknowledge them, and I do this thing every day. You know, I do a 3 gratitude list, and one of those is, you know, regretting, yes, but also vowing to do better and then doing better, right?
Yeah.
Promising that
yeah.
you'll do better without actually acting, like you said, getting involved,
right.
it's a lovely pat on your own head if you vow to do better.
Right.
But the point is, acting, doing something is crucial, and it doesn't,
right.
Like you said, it doesn't take much. Now, for me, I'm going to be very honest. Christspiracy, going back to that, it was tough. It was a tough thing to watch. And since then, I've been just like, you should go see it. Everybody should go see it. And I'm doing a scholarship. If you are not vegan, and if you are a person of faith, I'm going to be trying to give away some tickets for people to go see the movie, because that, like when we saw it at the premiere, all the people there were people, most of the people there were people I knew from the animal activist community. And I was like, I feel like we're preaching to the choir here. So I'm trying to myself figure out what to do. What is your thought about how to engage people who might not already be sitting in this group to see the movie and to get greater, to get involved to a greater extent?
I think right now, you know, I agree. I think having conversations, word of mouth, definitely helps. It will be released in some digital form and then soon. You know, it's word of mouth. It's, you know, social media is great when it comes to something like this. You know, but it's a matter of people and their food and what they eat is a very controversial subject. So, you know, what you can do, I believe, is ask your local theaters, you know, especially in the next couple of weeks, is whether or not they'd be willing to carry the movie, and making a push for that. That would actually help. You know, it's referring people to the website, to the Crispiracy social media accounts. And I think, you know, word of mouth. And when it does get picked up on the digital side, you know, on a streaming platform, it will have an effect. It will have an effect. So, you know, they're in the throes of all of that right now. They've just released it. I was at the LA premiere, then I was here. So the 20th and the 24th, this Easter, you know, it's again, you know, going back to the link between religion. We had Ramadan that just sort of finished, and we're talking about, you know, we're talking about Passover, we're talking about Easter, and all of these things are happening right now. And it's just the idea, you know, between religion and spring renewal, and just having that conversation. I think, you know, even if it's uncomfortable for you, or for those of us who've seen the movie or not, just to say, you know what, even randomly bring it up at the dinner table, bring up the conversation. You know, what about that movie, Crispiracy? What are your thoughts? Or do you want to go see it? And just ask a question, even if you're uncomfortable making the suggestion, because, you know, your friend group doesn't want to hear about it anymore. But I don't know, you know, you have to keep pushing those buttons. But you do so, and the only way I believe you do so, and I understand it's hard for people, you have to find your way, your statement, your mission statement, however your delivery is. Always do it mindfully. Always do it with, you know, understanding that rejection may come your way. Always do it with care and concern, and that knowing that the probabilities are not going to change your mind, but the great thing is going into a conversation, hoping that you'll open up the doors for someone to perhaps have a takeaway from something that you said. And that's how I think you keep moving the needle forward.
I love that you said that. And I will echo it. And I will say, additionally, highlight what you are doing, right? Not necessarily in a, like, the beauty of having this show, honestly, Saria, is that I get to do whatever the heck I want. It's a lovely thing, right? It's my show and I get to do it. And so, for example, when someone wants to be on the show, in the instructions on the little form, it says, we do not accept anyone who promotes the use of animals or animal products, period. Boom. If you are someone who does that, don't bother.
Right.
And I've had people say to me, well, why aren't you leaving room for the debate? And my answer is very simple: for the animals, right? That's my thing. However, on social media, for example, I post pictures of if I make a great pizza and it's all vegan, and my little sort of hashtag for it is all vegan all the time. I when I'm doing something, when I'm having a great meal, when I'm petting a cat, when I'm meeting a cow, because if I'm driving somewhere and I'm passing by farmland and there are cows by the fence, I'll stop by and I'll say hello, and we'll have a little conversation, the cow and I, or the cows and I. Often happens that way, and you get a chance to at least meet this being who you otherwise would probably never meet. So there are ways that we can be doing this and raising our own awareness and our own vibration, if you will, and at the same time, sort of, again, you said it yourself, non-judgmentally, and it's not about, I am not one of these people. I will admit that there are people who are going to be in your face, and they are so vital and so necessary. And I am not that person, right? This show is not an in-your-face show. I want this to be something that people can rely on to be factual and truthful. And the truth of the matter is, this movie is so important because it tackles a very prominent and ancient, if you will, issue. So I'm grateful to you, Saria, for coming on the show and for talking about it in such a beautiful and also vital way. Before you go, there are a couple of other things I would love for you to do. You mentioned that Crispiracy has social media handles, and I'm going to put those in the show notes, but I know people learn differently. Do you know those offhand, like the social media for Crispiracy, the website? Can you say those?
You could just, I know, at least in terms of their IG handle, and they have a TikTok handle as well. It's at Christspiracy, so it's simple. You can find it. And that would be for the TikTok and for their IG is pretty big. So I would go on their Instagram account. You can just go to Christspiracy.com and get more information. And it will give you a whole, I guess I can't use it. It will give you a whole background of the movie, where it is, where it's premiering, the steps along the way. They'll give you the about. So there is a web page for that as well.
Awesome. And I'm going to put those in the show notes because I know learn pe people learn differently. I do. I'm a visual learner, but I also am an auditory learner, so I like to hear both. What about you? If somebody wants to know more about the work that you're doing and the work that you're about to do, I know you're moving soon and you're going to be looking into doing animal rescue. If somebody wants to follow you and learn more about what you're doing, how do they find you?
I think I had mentioned too, I keep a very small social media account that's called Ahimsa, Ahimsa Brooklyn, and that's my IG. And I keep a small account. Sometimes you get some strange people on there, so I remove people as well. But it keeps me. These are just things that matter to me. It's just I use my IG. It's a small account as a personal blog for myself. Sometimes for awareness. The biggest thing I think is that to get involved. If you're in the New York City area, or if you're anywhere throughout the United States who is listening to this show and you want to find a way to get more involved, find your local humane society. In New York City, I would implore you to look at the website of Voters for Animal Rights. Not only does it encompass New York City, but it encompasses some of the legislation happening on the New York state level as well. I implore you to just take a look at the top federal issues. There's a handful right now, over the next year or so that, administrations on both sides, and believe it or not, Democrats and Republicans are both animal rights people. It's not just one versus the other. Unfortunately, Republicans get a bad rap in big ag states because they get a lot of corporate dollars, and they have a tendency to vote along those lines. But there are many Republicans also that are for animal liberation and ending animal oppression. So I really implore you, just look locally. And if there's something that's not right in your community, get involved in your shelters, see what's going on, find a way to hold people accountable, whatever that is. And social media happens to be a great tool to help hold people accountable, especially when it comes to those who have no voice, which are animals. We need to speak up for them. Faster, stronger, harder, activate yourself more. Otherwise, we'll have another 100 years of suffering. And I think we can get to a place where factory farming is ending very soon. There was a chat GPT, and the numbers, of course, are extrapolated and could be, maybe not. It's chat GPT, came out the end of last year that said by the year 2075, the majority of the world will be vegan. Okay, I'm going to go with that. And I'd like to see it sooner. But it's moving. It's moving. And people, no, that won't happen. And I say to myself, you know what? Numbers double every 7 years. Your financial portfolio, whatever that is, if you're saving money has a tendency to double every 7 years. I believe those numbers are highly possible, especially with the advent, unfortunately, with the climate issues that are happening globally. This could be something that really ends within my lifetime, and I'm hoping to see before I close my eyes, on this planet, in this human form at some point in the near future, hopefully past 100. I want to be a centenarian, but whatever that is, I hope to see a radical change and a shift in the thinking on how animals are treated much sooner than that.
Amen. That's all I'm like,
Here.
what do I hear here? Yeah, I mean, and I'm not particularly religious, so, but it is, there's something so powerful about the notion that we as caring individuals, compassionate people, can make a difference in the lives of other beings on such a grand level. With even small changes, I think is a very powerful statement. And the more we think of ourselves as capable of taking action, not just that we should, but that we can, is something really, really important. So I'm really grateful to you that you that you talked about it in this really articulate and also compassionate way. I have just one last question, Saria, and this is a question that I ask everyone who's ever come on the show. And it's a silly little question, but I find that it can yield some profound answers. And the question is this: if you had an airplane, environmentally friendly, of course, that could skywrite anything for the whole world to see, what would you say?
Ah, that would be easy for me. Very simple, and be kind to all animals.
There you go. There you go. I mean, that's it. It's
that's
funny.
It.
Yeah, that's it. I love it. And it's funny. Mine was even shorter because somebody at one point was like, Isolde, what is your answer to this? And mine was just be kind, you know, and
yeah.
That's it. If we're kind, if we're looking at everything we do through the lens of kindness by necessity, by definition, everything shifts, you know? So I'm so grateful, Saria, that you came on the show and that we had this conversation. I cannot tell you, it's the Monday after Easter. It is a perfect time to talk about this with the renewal of spring, like you said. Again, I'm really grateful to you for doing the work that you're doing. I'm sorry you're moving away because I'm like, I just met you. You're my new friend. But you're not moving that
I'm
far.
Always so. Here. No, I'm always here. I'm in New York quite often for a lot of animal stuff. So I'm always going to be here.
Awesome. Awesome. That's fantastic. Anyway, this is Isolde Trachtenberg. As you can tell, I'm fangirling a little, but I'm trying to keep it chill. thank you so much, Saria, for being here, for the work that you're doing on behalf of all of the sentient beings on this planet. I'm grateful to you, and I'm grateful to all like you who recognize the need for this work. I am Isolde Trachtenberg on behalf of the Creative Solutions podcast. As you know, the creative solutions we've been talking about today are based on the movie Christspiracy, but also just the notion that kindness and compassion and the knowledge that you can take action are crucial to making some of these creative solutions go. So until next time, I remind you of that. And as always, I remind you to be bold, be creative, and most of all, be kind. Thanks so much for joining me today. I really appreciate you being here. Please subscribe to the show if you're new, and it would mean the world to me if you told a friend about it. Today's episode was produced by Isolde Trachtenberg and is copyright 2024. As always, please remember this is for educational and entertainment purposes only. Past performance does not guarantee future results, although we can always hope.